How many of you find yourself like in some kind of battle? Not necessarily a spiritual battle, but maybe you're finding a battle in your life. Financial, maybe a relationship. Maybe you've been praying to God, God, I need an answer here. And you feel like maybe God is silent. Anybody find themselves in that? Okay, nobody. Well, this sermon is for me then and not for you guys. You know, gas prices. I mean, there's a battle. I mean, because we all have to drive to work. We all have to drive to school. We have to drive wherever. Gas prices, food prices. I read something the other day that the older I get, the stronger I've become. Because now I can hold $100 worth of groceries all in one hand. And so we're in a battle, y'all. But more importantly, we are in a spiritual battle that is fighting against us every single day. The Bible says sometimes it's like these fiery darts from and fiery arrows from the enemy are constantly coming around us, and that there are angels fighting on our behalf in realms that we can't see. And so in our world, oftentimes we think, okay, good, I've given my life to Christ, now everything is going to be perfect. And because of that, there are people out there that believe once you give your life to Christ, it's going to be smooth sailing. And I want to tell you today that Jesus doesn't remove the crisis. Jesus doesn't remove the crisis or the struggles or the trials that we go through. Because what happens is we are redefined on how we stand in those fiery trials. And faith isn't just the absence of fear. That would be crazy. You know, we still have a sense of fear, even though we have faith. What it is our allegiance to Jesus is stronger than the fear that we have. I want to read a story. It's in Mark chapter 5, and I'm going to start in verse 35 through 37. And it says this, "While he was still speaking," and that's Jesus, "there came from the ruler's house some who said, 'Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?' But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, 'Do not fear, only believe.' And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James." Father, I pray that the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts would be pleasing and acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I wanted to land on that, do not fear, only believe. That's where we're going to land today, because the context is this. There's a collision of two different stories that are happening here that are going on. This moment kind of sits inside what we call a sandwich narrative. And it starts off with this story. I'm going to start in verse 21 through 24. It says this, "And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, 'My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live.' And he went with him." So the story is here, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. So the story here is this man sees Jesus get out of the boat. He knows Jesus has been healing. He's heard Jesus preaching. His daughter is dying. He says, "If you come and lay hands on her, then she will be made well." And so Jesus starts to go with him. Okay, so that's where we're at. But there's more to this story. It says this starting in verse 25. "And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all she had, and she was no better but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, 'If I touch even his garments, I will be made well.'" So now we see another story. Jesus is going with Jairus to go heal his daughter who is dying. He's on his way. This lady that's had this discharge for over 12 years is desperate, reaches out, grabs his cloak, and in that moment, Jesus stops. And Jesus sees her. and takes care of her. We see Jairus' daughter's dying, which is urgent. It's public. There's a great crowd around him. Jairus is a powerful man. We see this bleeding woman that interrupts this. It's slow. It's hidden. It's a powerless woman. She doesn't have anything. She's just barely reaching out for him. And so why does this story matter? It matters because Jesus stopped and spent time and delayed for that woman. And when he delayed for that woman, it cost Jairus everything. In that moment that Jesus stopped and spent time with the lady that was bleeding, that was healed from her bleeding, Jairus' daughter dies. Horrible. Jesus was on the way to heal her. Jairus is excited. He's nervous. My daughter's dying. I've got the master with me. Things are going to work out great. Come on, come on. Why are you stopping? Why are you stopping? And Jesus stops because she needed him. And sometimes what feels like God's delay is actually God's design. Jairus' daughter, yes, she needed healing, but Jesus was about to reveal resurrection power. Have you ever felt like God has helped someone else while your situation got worse? Yeah, I see that all the time. Yeah, God answered their prayer, but God won't answer my prayer. But this is where that red letter word lands. Do not be afraid, only believe. In Mark chapter 5, verse 36, it says, Jesus says to the ruler of the synagogue, do not fear. We see that all over the Bible. Do not fear. Don't be afraid. Jesus says to the ruler, don't fear. And that Greek word carries the idea, stop being afraid. Stop being afraid. Do not continue in your fear. And why is this mattering? Because Jesus is not rebuking the feeling of fear. We are always going to feel fear in situations. But what he is confronting is the rule of fear over our lives, where fear cripples us so much that we just shut down. We can't move. We're stuck. Fear becomes dangerous when it becomes moves from this emotion, something that we feel, to now it becomes this authority over us, and it controls how we act, what we do, how we move. Fear is natural, y'all. I mean, anybody that's a parent, we're filled with fear all the time for our kids. I wonder what kind of world our kids are going to inherit. You know, our kids are out on the road. And fear is natural, but fear ruling you is not. Throughout Scripture, God consistently says, do not fear. Not because the danger isn't real. The danger is real. But because he is more real than whatever danger we face. He says, do not fear. That's the first point. But then he says this, only believe. Only believe. It's this exclusive trust. It's not just this general positivity. Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, only believe. And the word only is crucial. Jesus is not saying, believe and continue to panic. He's not saying, believe and continue to control your situation, or believe and rely on whatever outcomes come. What are you saying? Believe, only believe, only believe. This is a call for exclusive dependence on Jesus Christ. There is a call, and it's a deep theological layer for us. It's not this just intellectual agreement where we say like, okay, I'm going to try to believe, or I'm going to be optimistic about this, or I'm going to have this emotional confidence in this situation. It's a relational trust in the authority of Jesus Christ. Is Jesus who he says he is? Is Jesus able to do what he says he can do? Is Jesus in control of everything? Through him and everything was made. Through him and by him everything was made. He controls everything. In that situation, Jairus sees Jesus stopping. And he hears the people say, oh my gosh, she's died. Don't trouble the master anymore. And Jesus stops and says to the leader of the synagogue, do not fear, do not be afraid, only believe. Jairus is being asked to shift from trusting what he heard, that my daughter has died to trusting who he is, and that's the Christ. And the real crisis here isn't death. It's what we believe about Jesus in it. From a human perspective, the crisis is obvious, right? The girl has died. But Jesus reframes everything because for him, for Jesus, death isn't final. Death is not final, and delay is not defeat, and silence isn't absence. There is this resurrection theology in seed form here, and later it will fully unfold when he goes to the cross and the empty tomb. But here Jesus is already showing what you think is the end is really not the end when I am present. The third point, and this is important, I think, Jesus restricts the crowd. Faith requires changing the environment. There's a great throng that is following Jesus and Jairus, and they're all weeping and wailing, and Jairus' daughter dies, and this girl, this woman reaches out in the midst of this crowd. And so there's this throng around him, but it says this in verse 37, and he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. He only allows Peter, James, and John to come. And it's not favoritism. Hey, you three are my favorites. Come on, buds, let's go. It's a formation. Why limit the crowd? Why would Jesus limit the crowd? Well, because unbelief is contagious. Unbelief is contagious. It's the rule of the mob. As the mob gathers together and their voices get louder and louder and louder, it's hard to parse out what the truth is. And so unbelief becomes contagious. Their cynicism is loud. Don't bother the master anymore. Your daughter's already died. Leave him alone. He's busy. And faith in those moments is often fragile. And in those fragile moments of faith, it's important that there is a coming together. There's a formation that happens where you can stop the noise and listen to the truth. I mean, there are seasons in our lives where we go through something, and let me tell you, you don't need more opinions about it. Facebook will kill you. You'll get on there thinking like, oh gosh, what am I going to do about this? I saw families, and this is the truth. I saw people on Facebook say, I'm thinking about divorcing my husband. What do you think? And people were sending these or these or these or smiling faces or some faces like, you know, why would you go on Facebook and want opinions on what you should do with a relationship in your life? But that's the culture we live in. Well, this voice is the loudest. I guess it's the truth. I need to follow it. We don't need more opinions in those seasons. What we need is to be closer and closer and closer and have more proximity to Jesus. And what does Jesus say about this? And that's important because not every voice should have access to your faith. Not every voice should have access to your faith. And that goes for pastors as well. There are many pastors out there. You can find them on the TV, on the radio, on podcasts. There are millions of pastors across the world, and some shouldn't be out there. So don't listen to every voice just to hear what you want to hear. We need to be listening to the voice, and the voice is the voice of truth. And Jesus says, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. And the language of heaven now becomes different than the language of earth. The crowd says, she is dead. But Jesus goes, nah, she's sleeping. He's not denying any kind of reality. He's just redefining it because he speaks from a different authority. Earth speaks from what we see, what's visible. But heaven speaks from what is ultimate, that we can't see. And when Jesus speaks, he's not necessarily speaking to reality, he is revealing a deeper reality. He's saying that there's something different. There's something you're not seeing. I mean, think about in John chapter 11 where his good friend Lazarus is dying. And they send word to him. And what does Jesus do? He waits. He says, yeah, my brother Lazarus is sick. And they're saying, like, well, let's go heal him. He goes, no, he's just sick. But then he gets word that he dies. He waited till he died so that he can go because he wanted to reveal something different. He wanted to reveal a truth that we don't often see, that in this life, that this very short existence that we have here is not all there is. There is something bigger. There is something grander. There is something better. And he knows it. And maybe we can't see it because in that moment in our grief, when Martha runs out, when Mary runs out, my brother is dead. If you would have been here, he wouldn't have died. And he's like, I am the resurrection, Martha. I am. I am the resurrection. Watch what happens. And he calls Lazarus out. He's showing us a whole different reality. And so for us, and my fourth point is faith is proven in our walk. Where is our faith? Not just in the moments that we have. Jairus, it never says anywhere in there where Jairus argues. Jesus, what are you doing? Why are you stopping? Let's go. We're in a hurry. Jairus doesn't collapse. He walks with Jesus, it says. And that walk with Jesus is everything. Because between that word from Jesus and the miracle of Jesus, there's always a journey of faith. Okay, my daughter's dead. That's what I heard. But Jesus is saying, don't fear. Don't be afraid. Only believe. And so I'm walking with him because I'm trusting in him. I've lost everything. I don't know what to do. And then there's that journey of faith with Jesus. And that's where we're supposed to live, in that journey. We're going to have fear, but the voice that calls out to us says, do not be afraid, only believe. So right in the middle of this, in this red letter authority, Jesus speaks into finality. After the worst case scenario has already happened, the girl dies, not before, but after that, Jesus speaks, which means Jesus' words often aren't preventative. They're resurrective. They're not, a preventative voice would be like a motivational speaker. Let me tell you five ways to make your life better. Follow these 3 steps. Follow these 12 steps. Follow these 10 steps. Just send me all your money and your life will be so much better. These motivational voices. Or this self-help language. Go into any bookstore, if you can find a bookstore that's open anymore, or go online, look at books. All these self-help books, there are millions of them that will tell you how to prevent bad things from happening in your life. Really? Bad things are going to happen. It's more than just positive thinking. Jesus doesn't say, hey, it's all going to work out. He says, trust me, even in these moments, when you think you don't have anything, when you think it's at the end, when you can't see anything but the chasm that you're in and you can't see anything from the mountains of pain and suffering and grief and the things that are in front of you and you can't see beyond that, he is saying, trust me even here. In the hospital waiting room, that gap between the diagnosis and the outcome, where the unknown is there and you're filled with fear. What's going to happen? Are the delayed answers to prayer where silence just feels like God is absent? Or walking in the dark with someone that you trust where you can't see but you just follow anyway? That's what Jesus is calling us to. He's saying, do not be afraid, only believe. Because there are going to be situations to come that will cause fear in your life. There are going to be situations to come that are going to test your faith. And so what voice are you going to give authority to? Are you going to give authority to that report that you got about your health? Or that fear, that situation that you're going through? Are you going to listen to the crowd? Because the crowd will be this way one day and will be this way the next. That pendulum always swings. Or are you going to settle yourself in the red letter words of Jesus? I'm going to look at what Jesus said. I'm going to listen to what Jesus said. I'm going to take to heart what Jesus says. I am going to walk with Jesus in this And I'm going to allow it to shake my faith to the core. And I'm going to trust him. Sure, there are going to be situations where I'm going to be afraid, where fear is going to rise up in me, and I'm going to have to remind myself that Jesus says, do not fear, only believe. And so where am I going to believe?